Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. Our first one is probably best for conservatives in the United Kingdom, but of course it resounds to the United States as well. Yesterday was election day for the British Parliament, and all we kept hearing was that the conservatives were in trouble. The Tories would never be able to put together a majority on their own. Look for Ed Miliband to be the next prime minister. He was the candidate that was leading the Labour Party, which is the Liberal Party in England. And as it turns out, the polls were wrong. The Tories, in fact, got the majority they needed with some seats to spare. So David Cameron stays. Jim, nobody confuses David Cameron with Margaret Thatcher, but considering the alternative, it's a pretty good day.
No, let's face it. Margaret Thatcher is a much more rugged and tougher figure than David Cameron is. Here's the good news for American conservatives. Besides the fact that I think the British conservatives are a little more likely to be committed to NATO, committed to having our back in the fight against Islamist extremism, some members of the Labour Party and some certainly the Scottish Nationalists and other groups were pretty adamantly the quasi-isolationist and wanted to withdraw from the world. That's more or less in our interest. But basically, look, Greg, if they can do it, why can't we do it? Is it that we're not nominating whirling dervishes of raw political charisma the way they have with David Cameron? It may be, and the analysis that I'm looking at here indicates that this may very much be a story of Labour Party and Liberal Democrat Party mistakes as much as it is a story of the conservatives knowing what they're doing. But sometimes the ball will bounce your way and you'll get breaks like that. What's kind of interesting is that this is now, I think you could say, argue the third major election in which polls pointed to one result and the results on election day pointing to a very different result. And all of them have been kind of good news for the right. There was a 2014 midterms, which Republicans did significantly better than the polls indicated. The Israeli elections, in which Bibi Netanyahu did much better than people expected. Now, this one with the British conservatives. People who watched polling for a while have wondered about a shy Tory effect. And what it means is people who are Tories or people who are on the right but who don't want to tell a pollster about it because they feel like there's some sort of like public disapproval of holding those opinions. So they say they're undecided or they say they're supporting the other party. Go into the voting booth, vote for the party they really support. If that's true, it should say for conservatives, we shouldn't feel glum if we see bad polling numbers. And that perhaps we really do have something, if not a silent majority, maybe a silent plurality out there that is with us, but doesn't want to advertise that they're with us just because they know they feel like they're going to get heaps and heaps of abuse from folks on the left for having the audacity to disagree with them.
On to the bad martini now, and this is from Bloomberg. One of Hillary Clinton's biggest applause lines in her early days on the campaign trail has come when she talks about getting big money out of politics. Even when she's talking to the big money donors. It's one of the paradoxes of a campaign that regularly employs populist rhetoric while courting plutocrats. Clinton's message on the campaign trail, where she's focused on casting herself as a champion for everyday Americans, could get complicated by her courting of the 1%. That tension ramped up this week as Clinton arrived on the West Coast for a series of fundraisers for her campaign committee, to which individual donors can legally give a total of $5,400, as well as some smaller meetings in Los Angeles and San Francisco with potential donors to Priorities USA Action, the Democratic Super PAC that can collect checks in unlimited amounts on her behalf. So she's embracing the Super PAC, yet she's the champion of the little people as she rubs elbows with the people with bottomless wallets.
Early this week, I had had a not quite a rant, Greg, but a moment of watching, it was one of the big donors to the Clinton Foundation, comparing the criticism of Hillary Clinton to a political assassination. Coming like the day after the Texas attack, it really kind of struck me as utterly insufferable in the point where, like, factual reporting by the New York Times, Washington Post, Reuters, Greg, those nefarious members of the vast right-wing conspiracy.
Yes, of course.
That for them to play the victim card was just kind of really insufferable. And in this particular case, like, one of the problems we conservatives have is we're taking on an opponent who doesn't really mean anything they say. So if Hillary has to say we need to get money out of politics at a super PAC fundraiser where people are writing $100,000 checks to her, she's perfectly okay with that. Like, most people would have a certain, if not a sense of shame, a sense of like, okay, there's a contradiction in what I'm doing and what I'm saying at this moment. And that doesn't bother them. Sometimes the media, this is, I believe, Bloomberg was writing this. It's a delicious lead, populist rhetoric while hanging out with the plutocrats. But the interesting thing is that, you know, one, the Democratic base never seems to mind all that much. The people who are extremely wealthy, who are writing the checks, the Wall Street hedge fund folks, they're still giving to Hillary, even though she demonizes them in all of her speeches. And ultimately, the conclusion is they don't really think she means it. They think it's all window dressing for her speeches. And so, like, you shouldn't be able to play both sides of this, right? You should have to pick a side. You shouldn't be able to say rich people are terrible and then turn around and ask rich people for money and say, you know, and have them love you. And for some reason, she manages to do both. One of the great ironies is that Republicans are perceived as the party of the rich. Yet here we have all these super wealthy people giving to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, she might be the worst possible messenger for this cause. And of course, she probably doesn't mean it. The Clinton Foundation money haul over the past 15 years or whatever it's been, even aside from the scandal, the amount of money they've been bathing in over the past 15 years shows that she is not exactly the candidate of the little guy. But here's a sentence from the story, Jim, and I want to get your reaction to this. Clinton can't change the system unless she wins the election, a campaign official argued. And the only way to win the election is with the help of deep-pocketed allies. So what's she going to do? I mean, she's got to play under the current rules before she can change the rules.
I'm not going to unilaterally disarm. It's either nothing or you have to raise, in her case, she's talking about $2.5 billion. Those are the only two options.
Yes.
It's kind of irksome that she can be this shameless about it and that, you know, everybody can see the contradiction, yet it nearly never seems to have much of a consequence there.
All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, we've talked about it a couple different times this week. The media this week, really with probably two black eyes when it comes to its coverage of the shooting in Texas. Because while, of course, they threw out the caveats at the beginning of their commentary that, of course, the violence is never justified, these shootings are horrible, why in the world is Pamela Geller holding a contest to draw the Prophet Muhammad? Eric Wemple from the Washington Post does a very fair write-up here. He hammers MSNBC's Chris Matthews, Donald Trump, Comedy Central, Martha McCallum of Fox, CNN's Allison Camerota, who used to be on Fox, CNN's Jake Tapper, a lot of people there who you don't think of as rabidly partisan on most issues, with the possible exception of Chris Matthews and maybe Larry Wilmore on Comedy Central. But with the exception of Megyn Kelly, even had, you know, Bill O'Reilly and folks like that, Greta Van Susteren, saying over and over again this week that while she had the right to do it, it was probably a bad idea because it was provoking people. And there just didn't seem to be that many people who follow the First Amendment for their job and give them the right to do it. They're just not out there defending it this week.
Yeah, and you're right. I think that, you know, there were certain folks who... Donald Trump says something stupid is not a shocking headline. Chris Matthews, you could kind of put in that category. But the line from Tapper, and Tapper, for what it's worth, was trying to draw the contrast that Charlie Hebdo makes fun of everybody, but you're only making fun of Islam. Well, yeah. I mean, like, is Geller obligated to run cartoon or to have an art contest mocking other religions? There's a whole big kind of get mixed up in this idea of, is what Geller doing nice? Is it polite? Is it respectful? I didn't know it's none of those things, but she's not obligated to be. This is part of the freedom of being the United States of America, is that you're not obligated to be nice to other people's religions. And you can say really nasty things about them if you want, because you're free to do that. We can argue separately about whether it's good manners or whether it's even, you know, the question of appropriateness and all that kind of stuff. But people seem really want to jump to that. And then you saw some like vividly insane examples. I think probably the greatest, you know, example of this was a tweet that came out from the Associated Press yesterday that says, Pamela Geller says she has no regrets about Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest that ended in two deaths.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was fatal paper cuts, right, Greg?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The two deaths were the gunmen who came to kill people, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, why should she have regrets, right? I mean, what's she got to apologize for? It's the guys who are shooting at her that are the problem here. So it really was kind of striking to see how widespread people were in their sense that somehow Pamela Geller had done something, not just, again, something that you might object to, or you might say, hey, you know, it's really antagonistic or even unwise or creates an antagonistic relationship between Muslims and the rest of us. But that's all kind of moot compared to the point that people are trying to kill her for it. And when somebody says, if you draw this, I'm going to kill you, all of us have this obligation to say, no, it's not okay. It's a weird week, Greg, when Jon Stewart is better on this.
Exactly.
Right? You know, and you know, like for comparison, the Larry Wilmore, who has the follow-up show, he accused her of basically being intentionally putting innocent unarmed security guards in danger so you can make some bull bleep free speech argument. So Larry Wilmore, whose job is to say controversial things, is really upset that other people are making free speech arguments. I mean, like, your head kind of spins at this. You throw in the Chris Cuomo tweet, in which he's absolutely, totally convinced that the text of the Constitution does not protect hate speech.
Yes.
And it says it in there. Look it up. He may have a different copy than the rest of us. But ultimately, a lot of people who work in the news media don't really believe in the First Amendment as it's been traditionally defined, i.e. they believe that there should be certain types of speech that they deem to be hate speech that should be not legally permitted. And it's a little bit frightening that we are really entering a post-constitutional era.
Yeah, speech I agree with is fine. That's not free speech. And another thing here that I think, with all due credit to a line from George W. Bush from about 15 years ago, is the soft bigotry of low expectations. He was talking about lower education standards in inner city schools and so forth. But the reason people are freaking out against Pamela Geller here is because they expect radical jihadis to attack this thing. They don't say that when people are mocking Christianity because they know most likely people aren't going to lash out and try and kill people because they defame Christ or the Virgin Mary or something like that. But they've come to expect it now, and instead of demanding that they act like reputable people in society, they start making excuses for it.
To close the week on the thought that I'd had in the beginning, Greg, haven't we invented a great trap for the bad guys? I mean, just find a spot somewhere in the Iraqi or Syrian desert and say, hey, we're hosting a cartoon contest. We're going to make fun of Muhammad, and just wait for them to come running. And then as they just gun them down, you got them. They're all set there. So, but I suppose not everyone there will be coming to arm them and all that kind of stuff. And the First Amendment may or may not apply to obscure corners in the Iraqi Syrian desert. Okay, so there's a few little glitches in the plan to be worked on. But I do kind of find it fascinating that we've found a phenomenon that those of the Islamist mindset, they're compelled. They will go into a circumstance where they know people are armed and start shooting because they're willing to do this. And in a way, this is kind of the measuring stick of whether, you know, we know the First Amendment and Islamism are not compatible. Because the First Amendment is in the Constitution and the entire organizing principle of the United States is enshrined in the Constitution, Islamism has no place in the United States. These guys, because they wanted to kill people for what they said, are Islamist and had to be taken out. Both metaphorically and literally.
On that note, Jim, have a good weekend. Happy Mother's Day to your mom and your wife and to all moms listening out there. Talk to you again on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Reveal. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.